Welcome to New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care's podcast. This free podcast is made possible through your generosity. Please consider making a donation through our Ways to Give link on zencare.org.
So I'd like to begin by reading a poem, the first half of a poem, and then maybe I'll read the second half at the end. The poem is by Audre Lorde. It's called Outside. In the center of a harsh and spectrum city, all things are natural and strange. I grew up in a genuine confusion between grass and weeds and flowers, and what colored meant except for clothes you couldn't bleach. And nobody called me nigger until I was 13. Nobody lynched my mama, but what she'd never been had bleached her face of everything but very private furies, and made the other children call me yellow snot at school. And how many times have I called myself back through my bones, confusion, black like marrow, meaning meat for my soul's hunger? And how many times have you cut me and run in the streets, my own blood? Who do you think me to be that you are terrified of becoming? Or what do you see in my face you have not already discarded in your own mirror? What face do you see in my eyes that you will someday come to acknowledge your own? So we're living in very strange and difficult times right now. So much happening here in the United States and across the world. It's very confusing. I was looking at the world news today, and I was really struck and disheartened by these snippets. I'll just read a couple for you. The Bahamas Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Immigration is warning its citizens traveling to the United States of recent tensions in some American cities over shootings of young black males by police officers. The Bahamian Travel Advisory follows the fatal shootings of two African American men earlier this week in separate incidents in Louisiana and Minnesota, and after five police officers were killed and seven others were wounded by a shooter who opened fire during a rally in Dallas. The government of the majority black Caribbean nation emphasized in a statement on Friday that its travelers should avoid crowds and demonstrations in the United States. Young men specifically should exercise extreme caution in affected cities in their interactions with the police. Do not be confrontational and cooperate. And this from a journalist today. So now we have it. That dreadful thing. Americans are indeed at war with each other on many fronts. Not surprisingly, this conflict inhabits our political rhetoric, which has become increasingly debased, even childish. We quickly blame the other guy, the Mexican, or the Wall Streeter, the immigrant, Muslims, millionaires and billionaires. In our confusion and malaise, we have become a deeply angry nation. As such, we reach for scapegoats, and they're easy to find. Anyone who doesn't look or sound like ourselves becomes suspicious. Secretary of State, Ash Carter, who arrived in Baghdad on Monday, announced the U.S. is sending 560 additional troops to Iraq as part of a stepped-up fight against the cancer of ISIS. This means we now have nearly 5,000 troops stationed there. And yesterday on the train back from Barrie, Koshin and I spent a weekend at the 40th anniversary of Insight Meditation Center and the 25th anniversary of Barrie's Center for Buddhist Studies. It was a really wonderful weekend looking at the celebration of the Dharma and the spreading of the Dharma in the United States and actually across the world. And on Saturday, the topic really was wasn't only celebratory, it was also many of the folks who got up to speak about their long-standing relationship with IMS talked about the tragedies that happened over the last couple of weeks. Talked about how far we have to go still. And on the train back from Barrie yesterday, I was reading the Times, and there was an article in there about residents in a small town in Britain on the East Coast, actually a town called Boston. The residents of that town were being targeted, the immigrant residents of that town being targeted now by the Brits who have lived there all their lives. And there are a lot of Polish immigrants in that particular town in England who have been living there for a number of years and raised their families. And they've started to receive hate mail. Go back to your own country. One house was burnt down, and there was a note left in the yard saying, "Your family will be next." This is the world we're living in right now. The British Prime Minister will resign on Wednesday after this Brexit vote. So it's not just here in the United States, it's not just in Iraq, it's not just in Israel and Palestine. It's in little tiny islands like Great Britain. This nightmare is unfolding. On the altar behind me, we have the names of those who were killed in Dallas. We also have the name of the perpetrator on the altar. We have to wonder what causes and conditions motivated a young man, created conditions for this young man to pick up a rifle and kill. How do we understand this? This insanity? In the midst of turmoil, how can our practice sustain us? It seems the world is split in two in such a powerful and painful way. Me and the other. As long as we see you that looks different to me as other, you who sounds different to me as other, there can be no chance for healing, no possibility of peace. How do we move from empathetic response of fear and helplessness how do we move from empathy, the neutral experience of feeling another's pain, to experience compassionate action. To begin to model compassionate action. We talk about it all the time in our study here and our sitting. We sit to empty ourselves of all our biases, our racism, our conditioning, our thoughts and concepts. That's the plan anyway. That's the idea. It's very difficult to realize this practice, which is why we call it practice. You can't give it up. And sometimes it might feel like, what's the point? Nothing's changing. At this retreat, or rather this celebration we're at this weekend, Joseph Goldstein and Sharon Salzberg and Jack Kornfield is really actually very moving. They talked about these, you know, these three hippies that they were off in Burma, coming back to the United States and thinking, they had been moved so profoundly by the teachings of the Dharma that they wanted to bring them here, along with many others, of course, you know, in the Zen tradition. Their tradition is insight meditation. And the beauty of it was, they said they had no idea what they were doing when they came back to Barre, Massachusetts. They had no idea. They found this piece of land and found the money to buy this property and to build, there was already a house on there, and to build a community. And after 40 years, they have this really, really great local community and worldwide community. And they spoke about how, in the face of everything, there's no thought of ever losing faith in the Dharma. That, I don't know, naivete, hopefulness, whatever. With that, the spreading of the Dharma, for them perhaps, could begin to change what's happening in the world. It's not going to happen overnight. Maybe 50 years from now. But the idea of giving it up is just not an option. Here, each night at the end of sitting, we chant the verse of atonement. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I atone for it all. I'm not atoning just for me. If I were doing that, I would be separate from you. Our practice is to realize that we're not separate. So in atoning for it all, all evil karma ever committed by me or my ancestors. Going back thousands and thousands of years, atoning for all their unskillful behavior. Atoning for the atrocity perpetrated by Micah Johnson. Can you do that? Can you atone for all evil karma? Not just the victims of tragedies, the victims of war, but the perpetrators. It's a tall order. And that's why we sit. And that's why Richard undoes his sweet paper. Because he needs to wet his throat. And this atoning is making him thirsty. Go ahead, Richard, I'll wait. Your lenses. How do we each consider our thoughts, words, and actions in how we create separation and killing? How do we kill with our thoughts? Before we've even picked up the gun, or armed a robot with a bomb, to go into the space to blow up a young man. We've already killed just by thinking about it. How do we hold this precept of non-harming? We could have all sorts of ideas of revenge, retribution for those in Dallas, Minneapolis, Louisiana, Bangladesh. Politicians and this incredible election we're leading up to. How do we not make one evil and the other good? How do we see clearly, whether we agree or not, what is happening, what is being said? How do we abide in what is happening, what is arising, without turning to thoughts of annihilation? As I said, this is a really, really difficult task we have. Buddhists all across the world, and Catholics, and Christians, and Jews, and Muslims are all sitting wrestling. Obviously not all, but many, many, many people are sitting with this incredible puzzle that they're living in. What do we need to change? How can your actions that flow from the Buddha Dharmas, how can they benefit others? How can the medicine of the Dharma heal you, your thoughts, your poison mind, my poison mind, my unconscious and conscious bias, my racism? How do I use this practice to try to cleanse that? When we chant the four vows this evening, think about the names, the people whose names are on this altar behind us. And think about our ancestors on that altar. Those Sangha members with their smiley faces, those teachers who at some point, I'm sure, all transgressed in one way or another. All made mistakes. And yet, we honor them. We atone for their evil karma too. These people here are not separate to those people. Their actions, different. Audre Lorde was a black poet, lesbian, an incredible voice in her time. She died in 1992, I think. If you haven't read her, I recommend. This is the second half of the poem Outside. Who shall I curse that I grew up believing in my mother's face, or that I lived in fear of the potent darkness that wore my father's shape? They have both marked me with their blind and terrible love, and I am lustful now for my own name. Between the canyons of my parents' silences, Mother Bright and Father Brown, I seek my own shapes now, for they never spoke of me except as theirs. And the pieces that I stumble and fall over, I still record as proof that I am beautiful, twice blessed with the images of who they were, and who I thought them once to be, of what I move toward and through, and what I need to leave behind me. For most of all, I am blessed with myself, who are come to make our own shattered faces whole.